Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hard Hits. I'm your host, Derek Felix, and it is the Hard Hits Network again. Our second podcast of the day, both hockey, believe it or not. I did one earlier, did my own little breakdown on game one, and now pleased to welcome to the program for the first time. We've been talking about this for a while. One of my good pals on Twitter, hockey, contributes to Hockey Buzz, and a huge Ranger fan just like myself, that would be, I hope I got this right, Jan. Is it Jan or Jan? Jan Levine?
It is Jan.
It is Jan Levine. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, Jan, it's a pleasure, obviously, to have you on. How is everything going for yourself?
I'm good. Thank you. Obviously, with everything that's going on with the pandemic, it's nice to have hockey back, especially as you compare and contrast to the nightmare that's going on, unfortunately, with baseball these days. It's pretty amazing that that hockey is pretty much at the forefront of how to manage itself through a pandemic, which is something that probably 3-4 months ago, I don't think any of us probably would have said.
Look, I had as many questions, I think, about what they were planning as you did and probably everybody else. But when I think about it, when I look at, you know, each sport, I'm talking about obviously baseball and the problem of the issues that they're running into, and basketball, though they do have a bubble. But, I mean, you just don't know if these guys are going to listen. But I just feel like the more I've thought about it, and the more I, you know, even though it's a little radical of an idea, that having this like qualifying round, this play, it's like almost like a play-in, you know, a preliminary series. I've been calling it a preliminary series, best 3 out of 5, like the old days. And I guess I have to give Gary Bettman a ton of credit. I actually think right now, believe it or not, he's the best commissioner out of the 4 major sports.
It's pretty close. I mean, I think Adam Silver's done a really good job. I mean, I was a big David Stern fan when he was there, and I think Adam Silver has carried on his legacy, having learned under Stern. But in terms of, you know, compare and contrast to the public perception of Gary Bettman no more than several months ago in general, and now compared to how he's perceived based upon the way things have set up in terms of the bubble, in terms of all of the protocol that they've implemented, everything they've put into place in terms of trying to make sure the players stay safe. And more importantly, as you and I both know, having gone through several lockouts, the collaboration that exists between them and the Players Association is something that has become a bit of a hallmark for that group. I mean, it seemed to be, from listening to all the calls that took place between the two of them, is that there's a definite, you know, symbiosis and a camaraderie that existed between them, where you look back at the lockout that existed, you know, 6-7 years ago, that clearly wasn't the case between the two parties.
It's amazing. I mean, the way that the relationship has developed and the improvement that what we've seen between Bettman, who of course represents the owners, and Don Fehr, out of all people, I still hate him for what happened in 1994, August 12th, I'll never forget it. But, you know, they have done a really good job in terms of just being partners. And once they were put in this situation with this pandemic and COVID-19, they realized that, you know, they were going to have to make some consolations, and that the salary cap wasn't going to change, and they had to do it, and they signed the extension. I thought that was the right move, and I give both sides a lot of credit. And I also want to say that in just looking, getting a look at some of these games and the way they've set up these venues, it seems, I think that the personnel, I'm talking about the hockey personnel, I'm talking about the people who manage the ice, the rink, I think they deserve a lot of credit.
Absolutely. I mean, I watched a couple of the I watched the call that Bill Daly did and Gary Bettman did, and then also with I believe his name is Scott Mears, if I remember correctly, who handled the setup of the arenas, and just kind of the walkthrough with the doctor as well of how the whole setup was supposed to work, and just the thought process that went in there just in terms of setting up the arena. And granted, you know, both of us would love to have fans in the arena, and we think we know that, you know, the home fans make the environs when it comes to the playoff games. But the way they've kind of set this up in terms of how to treat it, where they've made it almost look like a small theater to a certain extent, and been able to make it a bit more cozy, for lack of a better term, with the piped-in noise a little bit, which is not the greatest, but decent nonetheless. You look at the boards being shifted game by game to give it more of a home field arena, and just the way they've set up both Toronto and Edmonton in terms of just the feel of looking at the arenas themselves. While the fans aren't there, you're not necessarily focused on the fact that the fans aren't in the building, which I thought was kind of interesting.
I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's when you don't have fans there, and so the atmosphere, obviously, it's not going to be the same thing. Obviously, you know, I had a Canadian fan who made an interesting comment to me about that, and that it's a little eerie. It is a little eerie. You know, it takes a little getting used to, but I like the fact that they did this. They have. You know, the teams, what their goal songs are. They have the goal songs. When their penalty's called, they're playing, you know, the bomb, 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 bomb. The Rangers on the power play. The same thing that they play for the Yankees. And I like that. I like what they've done. I like the way they've set up the interviews as well. And they're not taking too many risks, obviously. And, you know, one of the other things that we've seen, especially with the baseball, and it's the same thing with the hockey. You know, the broadcasters have to broadcast. They can't broadcast it there. So they have to do it, you know, basically looking at monitors and doing it, whether it's from Madison Square Garden or whatever they're doing it. And they're all doing really good job so far. And I just have to say, I like what I see so far. And these games, you know, just this is only day two, Jan, as you know. And we saw it with our team yesterday. I know they came out a little flat, and I think the Canes had a little something to prove. I think Quinn said it best. You know, Quinn talked about they played like a team that was pissed off, that lost four times. It lost all four games to them, and you're seeing that playoff intensity. You saw a lot of checking. You're seeing a lot of hitting, and that's what you want to see. You want to see players that are committed to this, and if they're not going to be committed, they're going to be exposed. But that's not what we saw in yesterday's game, and that's why it was a good game.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I do give them a lot of credit in terms of Carolina. They came out and they carried the play, or more precisely, I think they dictated the play. We knew that they had the capacity to do that given the fact they are a puck possession team and a much better puck possession team than the Rangers were. In addition, I also agree with what Coach David Quinn said, whereby the team was overly aggressive in terms of trying to establish a physical presence. It means they went out of their way to be physical, thereby taking themselves out of plays. You know, you not necessarily on the first goal, because the first goal was a direct result of Jesper Fast getting, for lack of a better term, blown up by Brady Shea on a clean hit, shoulder to chest, but then he allowed Slavin to get behind him, right, and ended up scoring the goal. But if you look at Trouba, in terms of a couple of hits, you look at Brendan Smith at one point in time during the game in the second period, try to make a big hit.
Brendan Smith took himself out of a play on one of those
hits. Ended up a 2-on-1.
I give him credit.
Two-on-one.
He did recover on one of them, but there was a 2-on-1 on one of them. And I mean, I've been tough on him all year, especially with the situation, but it is not easy to come in when he didn't make a lot of starts. He fell to third on the depth chart. But Henrik Lundqvist, I think maybe the time off really helped him, you know, because he's 38. And I think that time off, it helped, and it made him – I think he probably prepared really hard for it, knowing this could be it for him. He didn't know he was going to get the call, but he found out he was going to get the call the night before because there's obviously something wrong with Igor, and he's day-to-day, and I don't know if we're going to see him tomorrow. But I thought Lundqvist was outstanding, and he did a great job, and he gave them every chance to win this game. Made 34 saves, made the big save on Fogle on the breakaway. How about that save on Jake Gardner where the Canes had a power play? A similar play that they ran with Teravainen where he went across to Jacob Slavin, who could make the case as probably the best defenseman in the series. Slavin is just terrific. He's definitely a top 20 guy. But Lundqvist did an outstanding job. He was under siege early, and he gave them every chance, and he deserves a lot of credit. And I'm not worried at all if he has to play tomorrow, if he has to play. They have to play better. Their key players got to step up.
Absolutely. I mean, 100% agree. I mean, as I wrote in my column today, I mean, you can maybe argue that on the Slavin goal, he maybe should have been a bit higher in the crease cutting down the angle. But that's kind of being a bit picky. And I mean, Foss let him get behind him to create the opportunity. But as you mentioned, the save on Gardner, a blocker slave sliding from side to side. I mean, the second goal, he had no chance. It was a great pass across the slot. To Aho for the tip and goal, and then the third goal clearly was Mark Svechnikov, and then the third goal, the Mark Stahl, you know, the shot by Netkasov escape. But as you said, they have to play better, and it's also just the little things, right? So if you look at it, right, if you watch the replay, Ryan Lindgren on the pass by Svechnikov had his stick pointed to the left. Where he's pointing to the left, I have no idea because there's nowhere for him to go there. He has a stick in the slot and in the passing lane. There's a good likelihood or strong likelihood he defects that pass and it doesn't go to Aho. And then you look at the way Stahl, right? It's an instinctive play, but the way his skate was angled, right? You're taught to angle your skate away so it doesn't deflect on the goal. He had it turned inwards, so it deflected towards the net and past Lundqvist, right? So just little things that make a difference. But overall, yeah, I mean, I thought Mika Zibanejad had an okay game, even with the goal and an assist. And to me, we'll talk about, I'm sure, is that Filip Hietl and Kaapo Kakko were the two best Rangers on the ice for them yesterday.
Sure.
Pavel Buchnevich had a pretty good game as well. The big concern, clearly, for all of us, I think, is that Artemi Panarin was invisible, right? He slumped the last eight games of the season, didn't score a goal. He didn't have a particularly impressive training camp. He clearly was fairly invisible against the Islanders. And then yesterday, he also was somewhat invisible in that game, clearly not up to the standards that we're used to seeing from Panarin earlier this year. So they really need to get him going to really make the Canes have it to work on defense.
I 100% agree with you about Panarin. Obviously, we know how important he was to this team. And, I mean, to me, when I think about the value that he brought this year, I mean, I would vote for him for MVP. You know, he's probably not going to get it. He's probably going to go to Draisaitl. But I definitely think that if anybody deserves to win it from the players MVP-wise, I think the players might vote, they might have voted for Panarin. So it might be from that standpoint. I just thought, I felt in watching it and just taking a look, and I know obviously losing fast that early in the game, it forced Quinn to have to mix up his line. So he had to change things up really quickly. But they did a good job, the Hurricanes. I thought they really took away time and space on that left side where both Zibanejad and Panarin really like to work their magic, especially on the power play. And it just seemed like they had no room. And the Hurricanes, they did have one of the better, like, penalty kills in the league. And so there was that matchup where the Rangers had a good power play, and so did the Hurricanes. And the Rangers' power play, and unfortunately, it came up short. And their penalty kill, they gave up the one goal. So advantage to the Carolina Hurricanes and the special teams. They had the edge territorially, with the exception of the second period of 5-on-5 when there was 5-on-5 because there were a lot of penalties. And I really think that a lot of those penalties that you saw, that's just because these guys have not had a lot of game work. And so they're still trying to figure it out. They had to make the adjustments. And we saw, you know, a little more of a clean third period, an unnecessary boarding penalty by Greg McKegg. D'Angelo took a penalty late. And I was waiting for David Quinn, by the way, Jan, to do it, to put Panarin out there shorthanded, because I just felt like he needed to get him out there more. You can put Panarin out there for a penalty kill shift. Why not? I mean, the guy knows how to make plays. He makes subtle plays. He made a good play on the boards to Zibanejad and Mark Stahl, out of all people. You know, I know that, you know, I'm sure he regretted what happened with the play on the third goal, where Neck has credit for that goal on the one timer. But Stahl, out of all people, scores probably what was his first shorthanded goal probably since the Rangers had that comeback against the Penguins when Dubinsky and Callahan, I think, were together. I think that was the last time Stahl scored shorthanded. But I might be wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing that I wouldn't say annoyed me, but surprised me and bothered me a little bit from the ice time was seeing Brett Howden being fourth among forwards at 5-on-5. I mean, to me, that's something that just doesn't make a whole lot of a sense, right? I would have gone with Julien Gauthier more. I would have doubled up on Panarin. Might have started double shifting him, especially when they were down. I mean, tomorrow we still don't know who's going to play. The only thing we do know is Jesper Fast is out, right? So Vitali Kravtsov and Stephen Fogarty both had ice time today on right wing. We all expect that Kaapo Kakko is going to get moved up to the second line wing, which is where he should be, in place of Fast, and making it a line of Strome, Panarin, and Kakko. I mean, the third line, as I wrote in my blog today, I would probably leave PDG on the third line with Hedl. I would definitely move Gauthier up. Maybe if you want to try something, maybe swap Howden and DiGiuseppe, and have DiGiuseppe, McKeag. Now, he could go with Fogarty. My guesstimate, he is going to go with Fogarty, just because Fogarty is a guy who's a bit more defensive-minded, and you need to be careful from a puck possession perspective. But it wouldn't shock me to any stretch of the imagination if he goes with Kravtsov. But if he's going to go with Kravtsov, you got to play him on the third line. You can't play him on the fourth line. It's a waste of time putting him in the game to use him on the fourth line. But I do think we all expect to see Kakko up on the second line. And the other thing I think we might see a little bit is, if they are struggling offensively and Heel's really got it going like he did the other night, don't be surprised if he and Ryan Strome swap spots. And you put Hedl up on the second line with Kakko and Panarin as a way to kind of get that line jump started, especially as a way to get Panarin back into the series.
You know, one thing about Quinn, Dan, is that he will sometimes change things up. And he did, sometimes there were times where he did have Hedl and Kaapo with Buchnevich on certain games. I mean, that's something we didn't see, you know, too much of down the stretch, because the KZB line was terrific. But yeah, he's not afraid to roll the dice. I think that you noted that Kravtsov did get some time today in practice in that spot. I kind of think they're going to go on the safe side with Fogarty, just for this reason. The fact that he can play, you could play him on the fourth line, he brings energy, he's good along the boards, and he can kill penalties. And, you know, when you lose a guy like Jesper Fast, you gotta have somebody else that can kill penalties. So, and I could just see that being the case. You know, but I'm noticing here, I'm watching, I got this Leafs Blue Jackets game on, and the Leafs, they dress Nicholas Robertson. Nicholas Robertson, 18 years old, making his NHL debut, and the Leafs just got denied on a real good chance there. And Korpisalo, I didn't expect to start. He's made some good saves so far, but the first period was really good. I like that. I mean, they're playing a kid who never played. He's 18 years old. He got a great scoring chance, almost scored on his first shift. So if they do play Kravtsov, yes, I agree. You don't want to have him. You probably don't want to play him on that first or second line, because he's probably not ready for that. You'd rather play him on the third line, because then, you know, maybe you get that third pair. Maybe you get the better matchup. And I really think, when I look at it, it is about matchups. So, and that's something to look at as far as what they decide to do tomorrow.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, as you said, we don't know who's going to start in goal, either Shesterkin or Lundqvist. Lundqvist definitely played well enough, and that's just putting it mildly. I mean, he was his typical Lundqvist
self.
He
played great.
He kept that team in the game. He was the reason why they were in that game. They got outplayed fairly substantively. Yet, ironically enough, you look up, and with a minute 55 to go, it's a one-goal game, and they actually have a shot. Now, I do also think that the guy who needed to have a much better game was Tony DeAngelo. I don't think DeAngelo was anywhere close to what we usually see out of him in terms of defensively, but especially in terms of creating opportunities. That's the thing that surprised me. And then we talked about special teams. I mean, the two big things that stood out for me yesterday was, one, their inability to gain the zone, which is something that's been an issue with them in the past, and that clearly was a major issue yesterday, where they couldn't gain the zone, which ate up precious time. And then when they did gain the zone, they also had the inability to win draws. Been a big problem for them for years. And then on the flip side, defensively, I mean, again, I know the guys who read me a lot are not big into advanced metrics, and I use it periodically. But the one thing that stood out to me yesterday is somebody, Corey Seziger, who does a really good job in terms of information from an analytic perspective. He pointed out that the Rangers had 29 failed exits to Carolina's 9 yesterday. That is a huge differential. And if you look at the first goal that they gave up, that came big on a failed exit. They were unable to get the puck out of the zone. Carolina was able to keep it in the zone at the point, and they ended up cycling and getting the puck to Slavin deep for the goal. So that failed exit ended up directly resulting in a goal that made a difference in the game.
You mentioned that, and clearing the zone has always been like a Ranger bugaboo, even on the really good teams that we saw in 14 and 15. If they could get forechecked, and they'd be pinned in. I mean, and you'd just be on pins and needles. I remember I was on pins and needles for that Game 7, that third period of that Game 7 against the Pens, because they buzzed around, and it was just like, oh, God, could the clock just keep – could it tick down any slower? I mean, it was just insane. So, yeah, they have to do – they're going to have to do a better job there. I would like to see them play more at 5-on-5, play them at even strength. I know that's Carolina's strength, and the reason it is Carolina's strength is because they're a little more heavy than the Rangers. They have a little more depth. That's why – They can get away with not having Dougie Hamilton. I thought Vatanen had a good game. He got some shots on goal, and I thought he was pretty good with Slavin. So they do have some good depth there. And, you know, everybody talks about Brady Shea and how – and, look, he was disappointing, and everybody turned on him. But I'll tell you what, Shea had a good game yesterday too, and even Jake Gardner actually had a good game. So they do have a little more depth. So – my key is for the Rangers to be a little more, shall we say, aggressive at attacking the net, Jan. They were too much on the perimeter. They also, you know, they weren't able to really sustain consistent forechecking. I mean, the second period was better, but they need to do a better job getting that forecheck and getting players towards the net. I was pretty disappointed with Chris Kreider. I know he did pick up an assist. That was a good play by Buchnevich, even though he didn't get a point on it. And I'm talking about the Zibanejad goal where Lindgren, he threw a little shot there. I didn't like Kreider's game yesterday. And you said D'Angelo disappointing. D'Angelo at least got a shot through. Adam Fox did not have a particularly strong game in game one. So I'm looking for bounce backs from Adam Fox. I'm also looking for a bounce back, obviously, from Artemi Panarin. And Chris Kreider to be a little more like Chris Kreider by being that net front presence, because there were like no rebounds to be found against Peter Mrazek. You can't have that. Peter Mrazek's not Patrick Roy. He's not Marty Brodeur. He's not Dominic Kashuk. You gotta get to those rebounds, and you gotta get the jersey dirty. And Quinn was right when he talked about, yeah, they had more hits. You know why they had more hits? Because Carolina wanted that. That was their plan. Their strategy was they started finishing checks, and they got the Rangers off their game. The Rangers need to attack the net more. They need to be grittier. They need to be hungrier to get in front of Peter Mrazek. And then they got to do that by sustaining forecheck and having puck possession.
Well, we know that one of the issues with the Rangers is puck possession. I mean, that's kind of been one of those things that's been a major issue for them. Although I do think the top line of Kreider, Buchnevich, and Zibanejad can have that puck possession type game. Same way I think now with Kapo, especially the way he's looked since he's come back to training camp. I do think the second line can do that. But, yeah, I do agree with you. I mean, I think you need a lot more out of Kreider. I think part of that is also is because the power play had an inability to get set up. His value a lot is also on staying in front of the net, screening the goalie, and being able to convert those junk goals. He had 9 power play goals this year. Or springing him down the wing and letting him use his speed, and that was something we didn't see yesterday. I didn't see a lot of the transition through the neutral zone. Granted, give Carolina, but you look at the goal they did score ones, the Vinnegut's tap, and a lot of that was created by Buknevich being willing to take the punishment. And Quinn talked about also being physical is not so much making the contact, being willing to take the hit or being willing to take the punishment to be able to create and carve out space and be able to create openings and room, which is what happened. You know, they had the pass to the wing. They had the Royal Road pass over to Lindgren, and then he was able to get it to Zibanejad on the slap shot for the tap-in. Well, that was created by Buknevich creating room and space by going deep with the puck and taking the punishment. And that was something that I thought was also lacking yesterday. Now, part of that also is due to the fact they have a lot of guys who have not been in the playoffs, right? And you look at how many new faces are on that team since the last time they were in the playoffs in 2017, and granted, there are some veterans. But if you compare and contrast that to Carolina, who made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, there's not there's new faces, but not a lot of new faces that haven't seen playoff history before.
Let me put it to you this way, Jeff. You know, when I was writing my little series, just matchup thing, here it is. The Carolina Hurricanes have 7 Stanley Cups, meaning Dustin Williams has 3. You have a couple of former Blackhawks that have 2. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, even though I don't think he played yesterday, and Teravainen,
I think. Teravainen has 1 also, I think, yep.
At least one also. And you got a couple other guys there that have lost. Jordan Staal, he won 1 with the Penguins. And that line was actually the key to the Pens winning that series, that great rematch against Detroit. So you have those. So you have 7 Stanley Cups, you know, 7 guys that won cups. Well, not 7 guys, but 7 total. 7 total, okay? The Rangers have the remaining, the holdovers. Those are the 4 guys that you may as well just call the remainder of the core that's left. Kreider, Mark Stahl, Henrik Lundqvist, and Jesper Fast. And Fast was at the beginning. Those are the remaining 4 guys that played in that Stanley Cup final against the Kings 2014. And, of course, played in that 2015 conference final, which just, oh, God. What can you say? But those are your veterans. Panarin's one of your leaders. You need him to be better. If you have to get your nose dirty, then do it. I know Panarin can do it. I know he can. I know Zibanejad can. We know they can. We've saw Zibanejad have a great playoffs and just kill Montreal, kill Montreal a few years ago. And we saw Panarin last year step up. So. It's and Kreider, we've seen him do it before. So it's up to those guys to lead the way. And I agree totally with you on Kako. I knew Kako was going to be improved. I figured he worked on his skating. But I definitely want to see Kako in that top 6 role tomorrow, whether it's with Strom and Panarin. Maybe you start him on that second line and maybe keep Buchnevich with Zibanejad and Kreider. But definitely. And maybe even consider using Kako on your top power play unit and maybe moving Strom to that second unit because Strom's more of a facilitator. So these are things that I'd like to see from this team tomorrow.
I do agree with you with the leaders leading, and I do think that they're going to do a better job of it. I mean, I don't think they had necessarily the deer in the headlights look. I just think that Carolina came out a bit more forceful with a bit more purpose. In terms of the power play, I mean, I think part of it's going to depend on if they have the ability to gain the zone. If they can do that, and I do think they have – Carolina's going to be aggressive, right? So you need quick passes, quick puff movement. You need quick player movement. You need shots on net in order to counteract a team that's going to be overly aggressive in terms of pursuing it, right? Because that's where Kako, who's probably a bit stronger right now, if you look at him, than Strom, could have the ability to swap out, right? I don't know whether or not that's going to necessarily be the case. But I do think that is a feasibility. I think part of it's going to depend on the flow of the game and where they stand in terms of getting ahead or not getting ahead. But again, as poorly as they played yesterday, you never got the sense that they were out of the game, which I thought was a positive.
That's all due to Lundqvist making timely stops. And the one thing about this team, Jan, and we know it, we've seen it under Quinn, they've got a lot of character. They're very resilient. I never felt like they were out of it. As long as they could keep it where they kept it, and yeah, they did fall behind 3-1, but did what they had to do. They got the shorthanded goal. Carolina, give them credit. They did a really good job defending, and a little frustrating watching D'Angelo reset behind the net with under a minute left. I understand, you know, he was waiting for a line change, and Carolina was forechecking. I hate when defensemen do that, but it was a necessity, unfortunately. But I thought Carolina, they just did a real good job stifling them. And I noticed it against the Islanders that they just looked like they were a step slow. And when it comes to the playoffs, you've got to pick it up. So I'm expecting them to have more intensity. I'm just going to ask you, I'm going to throw this question at you. Just gun to your head. Who is in net tomorrow?
I have a hunch it's Lundqvist, so I don't think Shesterkin is 100%. I know the conspiracy, when I know that, I remember the conspiracy theorists writing, because I got caught up last night, that, oh, this is the way they were going to keep the streak. And I'm like, okay, he would have been the backup if he was healthy. B, if it was COVID related, he wouldn't have been in the arena. And C, Lundqvist admitted after the game that he was told Shesterkin was starting. So I think we can kind of rule out the conspiracy theorists that this is a way to get him to keep his playoff streak alive that had nothing to do with this.
No, I mean, I totally am with you. Yeah, when I was shocked. I'm looking at, like, wait a second, Lundqvist is starting? I'm like, I was shocked. I mean, I put it on, and I'm just like, wow. And then, you know, you hear that, you know, he's on fit to play, and we don't know what that means. But obviously, Shesterkin was in the building, so we know it's not COVID related. Thank God. But you know, and just looking at the short side goal, I know it was only one goal that he gave up to the very improving and clutch Beauvillier, who's really stepping up for the Islanders. That's not usually a goal that he gives up. And I remember, you know, reading that in one of their scrimmages, he gave up the same kind of short side shot to Brendan Lemieux. And Brendan Lemieux has terrible hands. So, I mean, Brendan Lemieux was a little bit of a disappointment this year. And look, they could use Brendan Lemieux for game three, but if they do not find a way to win tomorrow, I don't think they're going to be able to win three straight against this Carolina team. They're very detail oriented. So they're going to have to win this game tomorrow. And I do expect it to be Lundqvist because just general sense. I mean, yes, Quinn said that he'll be available, but that doesn't really, it doesn't give me the greatest confidence. So I'm not worried about the goalie. It's the team. It's how the team plays. That means being disciplined, not taking as many penalties, and winning those board battles. They got to hustle. That's what Mika Zibanejad said as we're in overtime. We can do a brief overtime. It's not going to be that long anyway. But this is Derek Felix, and I'm joined by Jan Levine. And Jan has done a wonderful job, and it's great to actually have you on, and we've done a good, pretty good insight. Is there anything else you want to add in terms of Rangers Hurricanes?
No, I mean, I think we've kind of broken it down pretty well. And I don't know if there's anything we really kind of left out that we haven't covered. I mean, it's a game of emotions. It's a game of runs. It's a game of imposing the will upon your fellow opponent. And the one thing I said yesterday is we talked about, Carolina really did carry the play yesterday, but we never got the impression that the Rangers were out of it, that the Rangers were kind of, wouldn't have a chance to come back. I think we viewed it as improbable, and of course, Stahl, of course, going to make it 3-2 did not necessarily, wasn't something we expected, but it clearly gave them the opportunity late, though I don't particularly love them remaining behind the goal for 20 seconds, waiting to come up ice late in the game. That probably wasn't the optimal either. But I would expect a much better initial effort tomorrow, but it's also, you need to, it's like I say in football, you have to play with controlled aggression, right? You have to be smart in terms of being physical, but don't take yourself out of the play and leave yourself subject to a counterattack. And that's what happened yesterday.
Well, the way I would put it is just make sure you pick your spots when you're going to do it. I would say the spots would be, finish those checks when you're in on the forecheck. That's one way to do it. Try to punish your defenseman a little more. I think that's something that they have to do. But that comes from, better 5-on-5. I know they lost the faceoff battle 31-26. And it's really, holy crap, Korpisalo Salo with just an unbelievable glove save, Jan. I don't know if you're watching this, but he just flat out robbed Austin Matthews, who just can't believe it. He just didn't get it high enough. This is just, I just want to see this one more time. Nylander is a really good passer. Wow. You know what? he did a great job here, just pushing off and getting that glove to where it needed to be. And I questioned Tortorella about having Korpisalo start this game, but so far there's no score, and Korpisalo has been equal to the task. This has been a good game so far. Did you watch any of the Coyotes? Did you catch any of the Coyotes Predators game? That was a surprise.
I caught a little bit. I think we're all a surprise, especially given the way that Arizona played in the exhibition game. And I think a lot of people had had written them off a little bit. I think about a week ago, I had actually taken Arizona over Nashville. I thought Nashville was one of those teams that was going to be hurt by the lack of home ice advantage, right? Because I think that arena gives them a little bit of an advantage compared to some other teams when they come on board. So I thought the neutral site might have been more of an evening factor. And I thought part of it also with everything that happened in terms of with John Chayka, them getting away from being in Arizona probably wasn't the worst thing in the world.
You know, that's a really good point, actually, by you. Obviously, I don't like what Chayka did. That's kind of Bush League in itself. He basically told Cespedes. I mean, I know, obviously, you're a huge Met fan, and I can't.
Yeah,
wait to
let's
hear,
not go so, there, please.
I can't wait to hear Joel and Evan tomorrow with that. I could only imagine what they could be thinking.
I don't have to hear one more yo, bro. I'm pretty good. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty weird. I mean, look, I understand from a health, but you gotta do a better job there. But I'll tell you, I watched a lot of the second period of this game. I watched some of the first, and I think the real surprising thing to me in watching, they gave up a really crazy fluke goal. So it was a fluke goal on Saros, where it calls off two guys. And the second one it went off was Duchesne. He had a lousy game. It took this crazy hop to Ekman Larson. He fires it off one, and then it's almost like the crazy magic bullet theory or whatever, which obviously I don't believe in. But this was the magic goal theory, and Seth Jones hits the crossbar from deep. Both Werenski and Seth Jones have hit posts in this game. You know, that was just crazy. It just took a weird bounce off Duchesne and goes in. And after that, they fell apart. I mean, you had Forsberg on a power play, and they're already down by two goals, and that's after Christian Dvorak finishes off a Kessel rebound on a really great setup from behind the net. That was a great forecheck by the Coyotes. They just looked like they were faster, and they looked more effective. And Nashville left some openings that they didn't expect. And then Nashville had a power play. You just don't expect Philip Forsberg is a guy who had a little bit of a disappointing regular season. This guy who's played in the playoffs before, he makes a terrible decision with the puck and gives it away. And at that point, it was 3-1. And just an awful decision. And Grabner, who we know, he always gets like a zillion breakaways shorthanded. And just, I was watching him skate him like he's scoring on this. And usually he likes to shoot, but he made a great play there. Puck was kind of rolling, and he made the deke and went to the backhand. And just a terrific finish up top by Michael Grabner, a guy that I like and a guy I still root for. And just some really sloppy play that you just don't expect from Nashville. They did play better, obviously, and got back in the game. Forsberg did score a couple of goals to kind of make up for it. But, I mean, Kemper, if you were going to give an edge, I would probably give the edge to Kemper, and he wound up with 40 saves because Nashville had 20 shots. So, you know, maybe the Coyotes – and I thought it's going to be a five-game series too. So I picked the Predators. I think this is an interesting matchup. How many games do you see this going?
Well, I predicted five originally, and I thought also that if Kemper had stayed healthy and hadn't gotten injured, he might have been in the Vezina race, given how good he was earlier in the season before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So this doesn't come as a huge surprise in terms of how he's playing. And I did give them, you know, depending on if Saros or Rene was in net, I still gave Arizona a bit of an edge in net, given how good Kemper's been the last year and a half.
Yeah, I'll tell you one other thing I want to say on that, just one final point. And it was Taylor Hall made the setup to Kessel, and then Dvorak potted the rebound. Dvorak's in a very improving player. He was a really big scorer in juniors. He was a former first-round pick, and he started to come into his own this year, as well as Clayton Keller, and Keller had a good game as well. He finished, and he scored a big goal as well. I think that was their third goal on the power play on just a bad penalty by Nashville. So some of the young players are starting to percolate. They're going in the right direction under Tockett. And I have to give Tockett's staff a lot of credit, but the big guys showed up. Taylor Hall, they traded for him. They gave up a lot for him. The Devils did a great job there in terms of the return, but Taylor Hall had a couple assists. He was involved. Phil Kessel had a couple of assists, and that's what you want to see if you're a Coyote fan. And if you're a Predator fan, you have to be pretty disappointed in what you saw from Matty Duchene and what you saw from Ryan Johansson. And those guys are going to have to be a lot better. You know, it can't just be the Roman Josi show. Roman Josi is awesome, and he had a great year this year with the 59 points, but they need more from him. They need more from some of the other guys. Arvidsson obviously had a little bit of a disappointing year. So they're gonna need more contributions if they want to win this series. So, but I'm not surprised it's competitive. So, can you give me some of your other picks really quick for this preliminary round? What were some of your other picks?
Well, I mean, I did have, I think like everybody had Pittsburgh over Montreal, but we did feel that if Price had kind of became Carey Price, the combination of Ken Dryden and Patrick Waugh, that they may have had a shot, as mentioned. So that's definitely one series. I mean, I think we all had the Oilers over the Blackhawks. So one thing I did say that if Crawford was healthy and played like he did the other night against St. Louis, they had a shot. I had the Islanders beating the Panthers. I did have the Jets beating the Flames, though. Obviously, the Mark Scheifele injury is a huge blow to them. And look, it all depends on your view of Matthew Tkachuk. I know some people are calling it dangerous, and clearly on the replay, from what it looked like, he got the skate up and made contact with him. And granted, if that was on purpose, he definitely should be taken out and tarred and feathered because that is an exceedingly dangerous play. And I do actually have the Canucks.
I'm just going to add on that because I watched that replay a couple times. I slowed it down. It looked to me like Scheifele had lost his balance. It looked like he was already on the way down. I will look again at the replay to see Tkachuk, and if because you're saying he might have got a skate up, so I will
look like he got
the
skate from one of the slow angle replays I saw. But the problem is the angle they showed a little bit, it has the ref in front of it, so it's not the most clear replay either.
It's
part of the problem.
We know.
Take a look at it. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And granted, the problem is. As you know, reputation precedes somebody, right? And that's the problem when it comes to Tkachuk. He does play on the edge a little bit, and that's what makes him effective. But you don't want to go over the edge, and especially see a guy get hurt. I mean, part of this is, you know, regardless of the reason, I've talked a lot about I don't know why they're not wearing Kevlar socks, right? This is the reason why you would expect players hopefully to wear Kevlar socks, especially if they can find the thin ones, as a protective device to potentially make sure that their Achilles or something on that side doesn't get cut.
That's actually a really good point. I mean, you definitely bring a lot of knowledge. And, yeah, I mean, these players, you know, we talk about all the equipment they do have, but there are certain areas that aren't as protected. And I love Mark Scheifele. Mark Scheifele, to me, is the epitome of clutch. He's a guy that, to me, I mean, I look at him, He can be a hard candidate because he's that type of player. Now, in terms of his future, I believe it's going to be Kyle Connor. I think he will be – he's the breakout star for me. I love Kyle Connor. I just love the way he skates. I love the way he competes. Look, losing Scheifele can change that series. Now, my only question, and the reason I went with Winnipeg, aside from the fact that I did like that court a little better than I like the Goudreaux, the Monahans, the Tkachuks, and the Lindholms, although Mangiapane, and he had a good game yesterday, they do have some good supporting guys. I just keep going back to Connor Hellebuyck. And Connor Hellebuyck, I believe he deserves to win the Vezina. He did the most with that team. You know, that blue line is not great when Neil Pionk is getting a lot of ice time as your second Like, he's really their second. He's their second defenseman. I mean, it's tough. I mean, Hellebuck is terrific, but I also noticed in watching the second period, and this is where the game got away from them. They were up 1-0. They gave up a couple of power play goals. Goudreau potted a rebound, and they gave up. They took a couple of penalties that where they got themselves in trouble, and so I would have to look for a little bounce back. I'm glad to see Cam Talbot getting the nod. Calgary, he deserved it because Rittich was not as consistent, and Cam, he stepped it up. So I still give Winnipeg a chance, but my opinion is this. And I did have the Pens like you. I went 4 because I thought Price could steal a game. I also had the Islanders like you in 5. But now I'm not so sure because I think the Panthers are like a layup. I think they're just too easy to play against. I don't know. It depends on if the Panthers actually show up, Jan. I took the Leafs only because I like their top-tier talent better, and I think it's going to go 5 because that Blue Jackets defense, they do a good job boxing out. And I think at some point you'll see Elvis Merzlikins. Our picks are kind of similar. I did take the Rangers in 5. I think if they're going to win, it's going to be a 5-game series. But it wasn't a confident pick because I think Carolina is a tough team. So our picks are very similar. I did go Oilers as well in 4. I gave the Blackhawks a game. Here's what I'll say. I'm going to make one comment here, and you could just come back at me, and then we'll wrap it up. If out of these teams, right, that are down 1-0, I would only give two teams a chance if they fall behind 2-0. Those would be the Penguins. That would be 1, and the Oilers. That would be the only two teams that I would give a shot at winning 3 straight. You could come back at me with whatever you think about that, and we'll wrap.
No, I mean, I think you're kind of right. I mean, I think the Oilers, especially if they get that offense rolling, is one of those teams that if they're playing downhill, especially, they have a real shot to win. I think they just got blitzed, and it was the Dominik Kubalik show yesterday, who pretty much showed why he was the third choice for the Calder Trophy yesterday. So I don't think that. And same with Pittsburgh. I mean, you look at Malkin, and look, it was a game that was a very tight, close game that ended up going into overtime. A really nice play by Petrie to get them the goal. But I do think you're going to see a better effort out of Pittsburgh tomorrow. I'd be shocked if they fall behind 2-0. Granted, stranger things have happened, but I'd be shocked if both teams fall behind 2-0. I think both teams, especially, you know, recognize that, oh, wait, we're in a series now, and if we're not careful, we're going to be led on 2-0 and looking at going home relatively quickly.
And Edmonton, don't forget, they're on their home ice. I mean, they're playing at Rogers Center. I mean, I know, you know, not having the atmosphere kind of hurts, but I would think, you know, being on your home ice, you're familiar with it. Obviously, they did not come to play in the first game. We know they're not great defensively. Darnell Nurse is their best defenseman. Klefbom is more of an offensive type guy. But they have to do a better job. I mean, you can't look up. If you think you're just going to get into track meet with the Blackhawks, hey, the Blackhawks have guys who can put the puck in the net. So, yeah, I mean, I would still favor the Oilers because I still love Connor McDavid and I love Leon Draisaitl, and I think Nugent Hopkins is the real key to this series, and I like Zach Cashman as well. These are some of the guys that I really like on the Oilers that I think can really make the difference for them. But, you know, they still have to remember that they got to play a little bit of defense because their goaltending is not that great to begin with. Corey Crawford is a Stanley Cup winner. I didn't agree with going with Mike Smith. I think I would have gone with what's the other guy's name? Oh, my God. Former Islander. I probably would have gone with the other guy.
Mikko Koskinen.
Yeah, Koskinen. I think I would have gone with him. And I have one other thing. Is there – now, I know – I don't think it was his fault necessarily. And Petrie is the epitome of an offensive-type defenseman. He's clutch. He scores. I've seen him score overtime winners for the Canadiens like so many different times. He must have got like 2 or 3 this year. He's really good, and that was just a blown coverage on that play. But do you feel that Sullivan could come back maybe with Tristan Jarry, or will he stick with Matt Murray? Because Jarry,
I think they go with Murray again. I mean, I don't think Murray was the reason why they lost the other day. I don't think
yeah, I agree.
Reason why they lost the other day. I mean, I would be shocked. I mean, again, it's feasible. He said he did go to Murray because of the experience.
Experience,
so it is feasible you might see a change. But I will have to say I'd be a little surprised if that was the case.
Here's where I'd be surprised. Like you said, if the Oilers do not win tomorrow and win, like, I'm thinking like 6-3, I'm thinking they have a big game and they play better and they play the way they're capable and even things up. And I have to think the Pens, and I know that Carey Price made 18, say 18 of those, I think is 39. I think it was 39 saves or 37 in the first period. But I have to think the Pens, I'm talking about not just Crosby, but like you said, Malkin, Gensel especially, Jason Zucker. I mean, they got him for this kind of thing right here. And another guy that I really like, and he always seems to step up in the playoffs, and he's always got a nose around the net. I hate him, but the guy's a damn good player. I'm talking about Patrick Hornquist. This is where I think those guys should step up in those games. As far as our team goes, I just want to see – I'm very curious to see that this is a great experience for them, Jan, no matter what happens. I'm very curious to see how they deal with this, you know, deal with a little adversity. You know, they know this is a best 3 out of 5. So I'm looking forward to it. I don't like the noon start, but, hey, they got to make sure they set their alarm clocks. And don't just set them before face-off. They better be ready and up early. And they better be sharp in that pregame skate and their morning skate because they got to come out guns blazing.
Agreed. They need to be ready from the moment the puck dropped. Be locked in, ready. Don't give the Carolina Hurricanes an edge tomorrow and be ready to go.
All right. Well, just one other quick thing. I did an analysis on this series, and initially I really liked the Canucks. But I started looking at the Wild and their defense, and I do think that's going to be a tough series for the Canucks. The Canucks, they got the higher skill guys. We've got a good buddy, JT Miller, there, a guy who needs to step up in the playoffs, needs to be a little bit better if we know about his postseason career. Elias Pettersson, who I love, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat. They picked up Tyler Toffoli, and they got Quinn Hughes on that blue line with Alex Edler, and they do get Jacob Markstrom back. That Minnesota blue line is pretty good, though. So, I mean, I did go Canucks in 5 because I think Markstrom's a little better. I like the Canucks top-tier talent a little better. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Wild won. I mean, how do you see that playing out?
So I actually took Vancouver over Minnesota, but I did love the way Minnesota played the other day. I really liked the way they came together. I thought Kevin Fiala could be the X factor in this series because of his speed. That was the one thing I think they were lacking in the past that Fiala provides them. So I did think it was going to be a little bit closer than I thought originally, but I did give Vancouver the edge. I think Markstrom playing for a free agent contract is going to be locked in. Minnesota still got to decide if they're going with Stalak, who is the one who got him to the playoffs, or Dubnyk, who is clearly the guy who was their driver in the past.
In terms of
getting them into the playoffs. But I do think that but I did give Vancouver a slight. I think offensively they were a bit deeper. But it also, I said a couple times that Minnesota, you know, with some of the moves they made defensively, and in terms of also if Dumba, who scored the other day, is back to where we think Dumba is, they're going to be a much tougher out.
You look at them, and you talk about Jared Spurgeon also and Jonas Brodin, and they pair up together. And then you look at Ryan Suter, who's Mr. Reliable. Even Carson Soucy, who's become a kind of a fixture there. I mean, they do have some proven guys as well. Zach Parise kind of came back and scored 25 goals. He scored some goals down the stretch once they made the coaching change, Eric Staal. So they do have some experienced guys, but they also have – when they made that trade for Kevin Fiala last year, where they traded – I think it was Michael Granlund. There's two Granlunds, Marcus.
I don't remember who they traded. Was it Victor Rask?
It's Michael. It was Michael Granlund. No, yeah, Victor Rask came over from Carolina for Niederreiter. I never understood why they traded Niederreiter. That didn't make any sense to me. Niederreiter steps off in the playoffs, and I always felt that Niederreiter could be a better player. And I'm not surprised that he was effective in the first game against us. But I love Fiala. I knew what kind of talent he had. And when I saw that Minnesota made a trade last year, I was like, wow, that's going to be a steal for them. That's going to change things. They have other guys as well. you know, a couple of guys, Nickel Sturm. I don't know if Nickel Sturm's going to play or not, but they're an interesting team. They're kind of a team that's, you know, they got veterans, but they're also in transition. And keep an eye on Marcus Foligno. This guy can make things happen on that third line. He plays with that energy, and you need those kind of guys, which is why when Brendan Lemieux gets back, he better be the good version of Brendan Lemieux, meaning drawing penalties, initiating, and drawing them, and making sure he stays away from any stupid stuff, because he'll get called. Jan, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Jan, for being a part of this show. It's a long time coming, and I'm sorry that we didn't do it sooner, but it is great to have hockey back, and I just hope everything runs smoothly, and a pleasure.
No, agreed. I appreciate it. It's good to be on. Definitely enjoyed it. Hopefully you can do this again as the playoffs wear on. Nice to have hockey back. I think from what we've seen from the protocol, presuming that the players remain smart and follow the directives that have been set out by the league and the Players Association, and more importantly, the doctors, and follow that protocol to the nth degree, which is what we've seen needs to be, is the requirement. I do think that the NHL has put in place kind of a path that can be followed forward that'll get us to early October and the raising of the Stanley Cup.
Well, Jan, I mean, it is a pleasure. Hey, don't be a stranger. Maybe we could do this once a week let's just hope that our team gives us something here, okay? Because I wasn't expecting the playoffs this year. I don't think you were either. This is, you know, it's a chance to get into the real Stanley Cup playoffs. And hey, you're playing with house money if you're the Rangers. And let's come out tomorrow and hopefully have a good game, get a W, get this thing tied, and create a best out of three, two out of three. That would be great. All right. I appreciate you. And make sure you follow Jan Levine on the Twitter. And he has some good analysis and insights. Link up your articles too. Make sure I'll link up mine. You link up yours, and that way we could, you know, just give our different views online as well. All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Same here. No, I appreciate it. And I guess the good news is, if you think about it from the flip side, right? If for some reason we don't make it, we have a 1-8 shot at Alexei Lafreniere.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Don't get me started on that. We'll save that. Okay. Thank you, Jan.
Silver lining, right? It's a silver lining.
Okay. So it's all about silver lining. Thank you, Jan. For Jan Levine, I want to thank him very much. This is Derek Felix signing off with Hard Hits. Be sure to tune in some more of our shows. We do podcasts and some shows as well that are not just hockey related. But, Jan, thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And we will see you all next time here on Hard Hits. Enjoy your evening, Jan.
You too. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.